Okay, so it's, is it working? No?
This was is working.
Okay. You can hear me? Good. So, what we're going to be doing today is different from what we did last year. I hope some of you, if not all of you, did look at the recording from last year, in which I introduced a number of technologies, and what I'm hoping to do this year is be a bit more interactive, because the purpose is for you not to listen to me, but to get an understanding of what it's all about. And as we were saying on Tuesday, or as I was saying on Tuesday, to remember and to learn, you need to be active. So that's what we're going to try to do a little bit now, be a little bit more active. And if you look at the overall plan, now, here, it seems like we're already into next week. Week 35 is next week. And the reason for that is that I'm going to speed up and spend a little bit more time here with the development tools and a little bit less on the general introduction. Because, as you could see from the first assignment, there are quite a lot of things to do and a number of tutorials and technologies to deal with and to give us enough time. Hopefully, we're going to start already this week. And the purpose is, by the end of the day, at least you should understand the overall architecture, how these different pieces fit together. I mean, we had the web server, we had the database server, we had the browser, we have some web technologies, and there are lots of pieces. So hopefully, by the end of the day, you have a little bit of an understanding of how these pieces fit. And that will hopefully help you to understand why some things that you think would work doesn't work exactly that way. We'll come back to this. But first, let's try to get you involved in thinking about what we talked about on Tuesday, because we're going to continue from there on. So, if you. Nope, sorry, I was too far into it. Let's go to the beginning. Review questions. So we talked about databases and using databases for managing application data. Now, what were the reasons? What do you remember as the main reasons for using a database rather than just a file, storing everything on the file or a set of files? You could type it in the Menti and then we can see, so if you have the, just type in the Menti code and then we could look at what everybody's saying and see if you can find some patterns in what you say. I'm going to wait till I get at least 50 responses there. I think you are more than 100, so at least half of you should answer. So get this a bit up before. Okay, you can keep on answering, but at least we can start seeing if you see a pattern. Structure. Security, multiple users, concurrency, storage control, permissions. Absolutely. I think it's interesting that security is in the middle. multiple users are coming up. Because we were, as you were saying, the database is for shared access to data. So it's very much when you have multiple users, that's really where a database comes in place. If you have just one user and simple data, then it may not be, be so important. But multiple users, and definitely security from different aspects. Number one, controlling who gets access to do what. And number three, rather than having files being replicated all over the place and potentially being manipulated at some place, we have it in a central place with central control. It is definitely about consistency. That's also very important, because if you have multiple files storing the same information, we may run into the risk that it's updated in one place, but not the other places. Integrity is quite related to that. So if you have a link to a page or a link to a record, you are sure that the record is not deleted. So all of a sudden you have a reference to something that doesn't exist anymore. Or you have multiple records with the same ID. You don't want that, to have the same ID and multiple representations of the same person. Speed, definitely. And we're going to talk towards the end of the course, we're going to talk about index mechanisms, index files, to make sure that querying is fast. Let's see. Okay, I didn't put in a Norwegian filter. I can do a Norwegian filter. I have an English filter for those words, but not a Norwegian one. I'll put it next time, maybe. There is, data independence. It's a small one, but it's actually quite an important one. You remember we talked about the problem that when the file has been implemented for one specific application, if you need the same data, then you are bound to the structure of the file. What you're going to see, especially from relation databases, but also from the other databases, is that the data format is independent of the application. So we find a way to represent data that's independent from the application, independent from one specific use, which again facilitates reuse and sharing among users and applications. Okay, yeah, very good. We just keep that in mind, because I had a question on Tuesday from a student having the course last year and was wondering whether we should be using a relational database or a graph, more modern graph database, or a document database. And the answer is not very easy. The answer is it depends. So the first thing when we decide on what database to use or whether or not to use the database is to understand what is the need of the application. So these are the things we need to look into. Is security important? Is sharing important? Is data independence important? We need to go through all of these. And if you answer yes on sufficiently many of these points, then a database is probably the right way to go. Okay, one more from Tuesday. And that, we talked about database, we talked about DBMS, and the database server. Now, what is the relationship between these terms? And you had to write in a short answer there, I think. Is it? Now, when I ask this question, it's because there is a difference between the three of them. But unfortunately, when we talk about these things, when I mention them briefly, I may use database for all of these three. I may use database meaning the server, I may use database meaning the DBMS, and sometimes the database. But if we were to be accurate, then we need to be and make sure that we are not misunderstood. We need to be clear on which of these terms are actually ones we have in mind. Let's see. Let's see. I wanted to scroll up. Can I scroll? Let's see. They're the same. No, they're not. Access the database server, which stores the data in the database. I think that is really kind of the clue here. So let's just draw a simple image of that. So we have okay, pretty close. So we have the disk. And that is where data is stored. So this is where we have our databases. So we have a number of databases potentially on the same disk. Question?
Do you mean that like file system?
Yeah. Yeah, because data needs to be stored somewhere. So they would be on the file system. Absolutely. And the file system is under control of what? Yeah. The DBMS. Oops, sorry. Oops, didn't look like much like a. So, here we have the DBMS, and these are our databases, the ones there. Because we were saying that a database is a logical collection of data, data that are logically related, connected. But then all of this, let's see here, may be on the same server. So the disks are controlled. So this is the database server. You agree on that? So that's how it is related. Server is the one that runs the software. The DBMS is the database software that controls access and operates on the database data that's stored on the file system somewhere. So this is, if we have this model and this understanding in place, then it's easier to differentiate between when we talk about the server, because the actual database, the data may be distributed, but the server might be still centralized. And we may have different types of DBMSs running on the same server as well. You can imagine having multiple databases on this one machine. Or the DBMS may run on many servers. If you have a parallel database, you can have it. So there are many configurations. Good. So then let's go to the next. Now, I was saying on Tuesday, I need three volunteers, at least three. I mean, if there are two from the same group, that's fine, we can deal with six. So, but no more than two. One or two from each of the classes. I need one or two from each of them. So, anyone from the data engineer? Get down in the break, and then we make a note down the names in the break. Information security, computer operations. Okay, good. So you come down in the break as well, and we can note the details. And then programming. From programming. Perfect. Three. Okay, four. I get two of you. So then you can, then we can see if both are interested. Great. That was easy. That's quicker than last year. I'm good. Or I'm happy. That was good. So, now that we have that behind us, now we can look ahead. What we're going to do now is we're going to do two things today. First, we're going to look at the architecture of web-based applications. We are not going to say so much about the database now because we're going to go more into the database part next week. But at least you get to see it in the pictures. And then next week we'll go more in detail about the database part. But at least the web-specific technologies and part here. So we'll start by looking at the application architecture, and then we will go into the technologies a bit later. So why, and this is a repetition, so this slide was also in the, so those of you who looked at last year's lecture, I also included this slide that last year, but I wanted to make sure there, because there are some important facts here. Now, first of all, it's platform. This provides platform independence, which means that a web application, you need a browser. Whether you use a Mac or you have a smartphone or an Android phone or an iPhone or whatever you have, as long as it's a browser, you can use the app. So it means that end users can access this from whatever they are. And it's quite a common architecture for database applications. We looked at many of the applications on Tuesday, and we could see that many of these applications are applications on the internet, and they are using these platforms. So it makes sense from that point of view as well. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to be fighting and trying to do software testing. It's programmers don't typically like that, but hopefully we get to like it better than what we've been before. And the good thing about the web platform is that it's easy to write acceptance tests, because what is the result of a web application operation? It's a web page. So if we have something that can parse a web page, and we do, because we have browsers, so it means that when we like to test, we can just ask a web browser to tell us what's on the page, because what's on the page is actually what the user interface is all about. So if you want to test an operation, you can just say, okay, does this page contain this link? Does this page contain this table element? Does this page contain this button? And that way we can check that the results of our operation was the correct one. If we have a general application, it's much harder because it depends on the size of the screen, and it depends on many things, where things are. So acceptance testing is much easier. And for us, the database programming remains the same. We go to the database, we verify that the user has access, we run a query, we get the data, and we get the data back into some formatting software. So it doesn't change the understanding of the database part. But what we are excluding is, if you were to develop a web app, you would not do it our way. You would not start with the small, tiny details. You would use frameworks, either on the server side or on the client side, or both. So you wouldn't go down and write HTML and PHP code directly the way we do it. So you would use some higher-level software. But for to keep it, you have enough software and enough tools to deal with already in assignment one. So we're just going to skip all these things. Just keep in mind that if you like web app development, you may want to look into some more advanced software before you do that. Okay, so let's do a little bit on see what you remember from. How many did actually look at the video or did prepare the way I was suggesting? Yeah, about half. That's, I guess, what you can expect. So, sorry, there was one more. We talked about N-tier or three-tier architectures. And what are the three tiers that we talk about in the... write it down in Menti. Menti, yeah, it's all about Menti, you know. We'd like to see your responses. Yeah. Three tiers. So as you do that, let me just... So, server, client, software, that is correct. Now, what do we call the client in a web application? Not meant for this one, no, it's the browser. Yeah, so we have the browser. Let's see. And let's see if it takes this one. No, it was too complex. And we have the, what is the server? It's actually the, because we are going to have multiple servers, web server. And let's see. We have the the database server. Now, when we talk about servers here, we can think of them as physical servers. So if I run my client software here, then it may be that the server is a server in Trondheim, and the database is a database Trondheim or somewhere else. There may be actual physically different servers. But when we install XAMPP, all these three tiers are in the same computer. So my browser is here, the web or the Apache server is here, and the database server. They're all running on my computer or your computer. So, but we still have to consider these three tiers. So if I look at the file system, I don't know if you have started looking at the file system. Is this readable or if the font's too little? No, it should be okay. So if I go on my computer, I keep my data here. So this is where I have the assigned one. You can see I have the Git repo there because you see the Git .git file or catalog and see the Git ignore. So this is a Git repo that I have on my computer, which would be the one that is on the client side. But if you look at the server, I have installed them all under extras, XAMPP. Then if we go to the server, then all the web pages that we are seeing on the web app is here under htdocs. So under htdocs, I have INT 2571, I have assignment 1, and I have the same files, or actually just the application files. the source files. I don't have the test files and everything else, but this is where I have the source files. So on my computer, I have two copies of all the files. And I think you should do the same. You should get into the habit of not working directly on the files on HD docs. Because HD docs, that's your web server. That's the application running. And you don't want to get into the habit of modifying those files directly. Because your process should be like you first develop your software, you test it, and when it works, then you deploy it, which means that you copy it to the server. So what you will see me doing is that the files I'm going to be modifying are the files here on my source disk. This is where I have the source code for all the and Git and everything. And when I go through and have it all tested and sure that now it's ready for deployment, I'm ready to see how it looks like on the web server, I'm going to copy it over here. You follow me? And here, if you look at the same, so with XAMPP, it has htdocs, and it also has MySQL directory, where all the MySQL files are. So if you look here, so what is a database? Well, database is, in this case, a set of files. A set of files will represent or restore the data that's in the database. And the DBMS is controlling access to these files. We're going to talk about it a little bit later. But here you can see the event table. All the event data is stored in that file. And it has a file with some more metadata in there. So a database needs to store data somewhere. So the database data needs to be stored somewhere. And it's going to typically be stored on disk. And the DBMS is the one that will access these files and read the data and give you the data when you need them. So going directly on these files is don't touch them. Don't do it anything because then you're going to mess up the DBMS potentially. Let's see if I had another question. I think I did. Now, just to understand this picture. So if we go back to this picture, we have the browser, the web server, and the database server. If I here, if I go here to the under htdocs, I have my assignment code. So if I go to the controller and I take the controller and I drop it there onto the browser, will I see, because it's a PHP file, will I see, let's see, this archive? Or what will I see? Just answer on Menti, and then we'll see what people believe. Let's see. Okay, it's easy to test. So let's take this file and dump it here. So this is what we see. What do we see? We see the source code. And why is that? If we go here, so here, inside the web server, we have the what you call the PHP interpreter. So inside the web server is a PHP interpreter. So when the web server opens a PHP file, it would send it to the PHP interpreter. The PHP interpreter would decode what's there, rerun the commands, would output whatever is output, and give it back to the web server so that the web server can just pass it back to the browser. But what we did now is that we took a local file here on the browser side and opened it in the browser. It's just a looking file. There's no server involved. There's no PHP processor involved. It's just a file, and we look at the file, and this is what we see. So this file, when it's opened in the server and the Apache server sends it to PHP interpreter, the PHP interpreter will analyze the code, run the software, and will generate this page. So you follow the architecture, follow what's happening. So and the way to open this is then, of course, to type in the URL. It's a local host, and if you remember on my disk, htdocs, under htdocs, I have IMT 2571, I have assignment 1, and in assignment 1, I have my controller. And this maps to the URL, localhost, or whatever server you're running on. And then under htdocs is IMT 2571, there's a subdirectory called assignment 1, and that's where the index.php file is. So that's the mapping between what's called the document root. Htdocs is a document root where all PHP scripts, all images, all static HTML pages are stored. And when we type in a URL, the server will go to the disk, find the file, and will say, okay, if it's PHP, and how it's going to do this, if you look at the source code, let's see. So if you see here, this is the magic. Inside a file of type PHP, if we have this sequence, less than sign, question mark, and PHP, the Apache server is going to take whatever is from there until it finds a question mark followed by a greater than sign. Let's see. Where was that? It should be somewhere down here. I don't see the end of the file probably here. What's that? There should be here. It truncated it. But at the very end of the file, there needs to be a question mark and a greater than sign that says that, okay, everything in between is code that the PHP processor is supposed to handle. So just to show you this is the same code. Controller, if we go to the very end, it should be, that's the problem, I don't see the very bottom. No, it didn't have one. Okay, it should have, I forgot it. So it's implicitly there. Sorry, should be, that should be the end of it. So what we need to do to have PHP run is we need to have the file stored on the server, and it needs to be of type have file extension .php, and in that file we need this PHP instruction. It's called the processing instruction that tells the web server that what comes next is PHP code that the script will run, or a PHP interpreter will run, and whatever the results of that script is will be passed to the web server. And what is the result of such a script? Any ideas?
A web page.
So what is the result is that the script will print out or write something to the output buffer, and that is typically HTML code. And that HTML code will then be passed to the client. Let's see where we are in. So hopefully you have an idea about the workflow, how this is staged, and so you make the file locally, and you make sure that it's fine. You put it on the server, and then you open the browser to see how it looks like. And we're going to talk about testing not next week, but the week after. But there are two types of testing. We talk about unit tests, and that's typically where we that's where we try to test that one module or that one class that we are working on. And when it's passed, we need to do the acceptance test. An acceptance test will typically run on the web server. So then we need to copy the file to the web server. What I have done in the code that I uploaded to, I think it is included in the code uploaded to the Git repo, is I have this file, deploy bat. On Windows, what it does is basically it deletes all the application files on the server, and it copies the files locally to the server. So whenever I want to make the new deployment, whenever I change my files locally, I want to put them up to the server, I have this small script. Those of you who are using Linux or Macs, you could quickly put together a similar one. And you could share it as well, or give it to me, and I could put it up and share it and add it to the repo, if you like to. Because it's that's a good way of doing it. So you change the code, and you run your local tests, and when you're ready to put it on the server, you can just run the script. There are tools, again, that you could use for this, configuration tools, integration tools, but that's too much, I think, to include. You already have got a lot of tools to deal with. So, but that's typically what you would do. You would use a tool that will see what have changed and will just copy the files that have changed and do everything. So if you like to, you are free to install some of these tools instead for dealing with it. Or you could just copy them manually. Just remember to do it. I forgot in the lecture last year, and I kept on changing files, and nothing happened on the server because I forgot to copy to the server. So that I'm quite sure you will make some of the same mistakes as well. One final thing before we take a break, just to give you an understanding. We're going to talk about Model View Controller next week when we go into PHP, but that just let you understand how the overall setup is. So if we I want to do the here. If you look at the assignment, this will be in the source directory when you get the Git repo. That's what you're going to copy to the server. So if you look at it, it has the three folders, one for the controller, one for the model, and one for the views. Sorry, I need to look at assignment one. So, yeah. And index.php is the one that starts it all. So if you look at that file, here, the index.php. So what the index.php does is it just runs a controller. It just creates and activates a controller. So if you look at the controller software, the controller class, it has the function invoke. And if you look at the details there, it has a number of alternatives depending on whether you're going to list the whole archive, you're going to list information about one of the events, whether you're going to add an event, delete an event, modify an event. It has entries for all of these. But just for, we're going to go more into it in detail next week. But just to show you a little bit about how it looks like for getting the whole archive. So what we are seeing here is when we open the browser with just the index.php file, nothing else, just the index.php file, we open it, then it ends up here. Nothing is requested, so we'll just show the list. What's going to happen then is that first we create a list of events from the database. In this case, my database is just the web server. The web server has a mechanism for storing files in the session object, and it's just storing it there. And when after it creates, it gets all the events from there, it goes and creates a view, which is an event archive view that has that list of events and has some other parameters. So this is how the application works. IndexPHP brings up a controller. The controller goes to the model to get the data and passes the data to the view for display. And what the view does is, in create, it's just writing this to the stream that will be returned to the application. And then if something goes wrong, then we create some error views instead and send some other error pages back to the user. Now, I think I have one more question for you to think about before we have the break. Because in the in this case, as I said, the data is stored in the session object on the server. I hope all of you, or at least most of you, know what the session object is. Because here comes the question. Did I close it? Oh, I did. Sorry, then the question has to be for... we'll do it just here then. I think I closed my Menti window. The question is, if I go here and I open a new incognito window, you know what that is? Yeah. So I open a new incognito window and I go to... Sorry, I need to do something else first. Let's just add a new video here, or a new event, sorry, test. And the date is today. And I don't need any description. And I add this new event. So it was successfully added. So now I have a test down there. The question now is, when I open this one, how many events will I see in the list? The three, or will I see seven? No, sorry, four, with the last one having ID 7. Who think we will see three? And who think we will see four? And most don't know. That's what I get from this. The thing is that we see only three. So on one, I have three. On the other one, I have four. And why is that? Because they have their own database, if you like to say it that way. Because when you go to the open this application, you create a session. And a session is something personal. Because as I explained in that video, the web server is stateless. The web server does not have any information about what happened before. It's just taking whatever operation and works on it. But if you are logging in and you would like to do a lot of things while you're logged in, or you want to transfer money and you do it in several steps, the server needs to know what happened. And the way the server does this is that it keeps a session object, an object for each one of us. So when I logged in with the incognito window, I create a new session. And that session got its own database, which was new with the three entries. So the one that I'm seeing in the other session is different. So when I modify one, it won't change the other one. Because the session object is not shared. So, sorry, 45 minutes up. So what you're going to do in the assignment is to replace this session object handling that works just to show you how the application is supposed to work, and replace it with a real database. And that is shared. So that means that if you have multiple users and they access from different browsers, they will see the same thing, not the two different things as we saw here. because right now it's just a mock for me to demonstrate what the application should be without giving you the class for dealing with database data. But you should you can test this and play with it. Just remember, now, why is I'm getting 7 here, and why not